This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. After getting off to a rough start, something magical happened with the Carolina Panthers this year. They won 8 in a row, tying a franchise record, and suddenly a team with more than their share of losing seasons was generating buzz. The Panthers were suddenly for real. Then came last Sunday night's primetime game against the Saints in New Orleans, an embarrassing loss. And here's something else that has changed. No one seems despondent about this. Everyone has regarded the loss as unfortunate, but not something the team can't bounce back from. So it's onward and upward. We're still a playoff contender. It'll be tight, but we're in the race. So what happened to turn this team around? How will they recover from last Sunday's loss, and what are our chances to be playoff bound? Who better to talk about all of this than the play-by-play voice of the Carolina Panthers, my old friend, we used to own that town, Mick Mixon. Welcome back.
What's up, Mikey? How you been?
I've been good. How are you?
Good.
And since Mick might be considered by some to be a homie, we've also opened the door to Charlotte Observer sports writer Scott Fowler, who has written the book 100 Things Panthers Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die. Well, welcome back. Good to see you again as well.
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
I'm good. Now, the last time we had you on, Mick, it was just prior to the beginning of last season, and you had high hopes and made high promises for the team, which, sadly, did not come true. Now, I don't know if they disappointed or surprised you or if you were just holding back when you were on the air with us. But that said, both of you get really close-up looks at the Panthers week in and week out. I think you've been to every single game ever, right?
Well, no, I think I've missed a few, but I have been to, ever since the beginning, I have been around for, you know, almost all of the games.
So what has happened this year to suddenly turn this team into winners?
I think a couple of things. Number one is, this wasn't a bad team that all of a sudden became good. It was a good team that wasn't closing the deal, that was losing close games. This team has had a strident belief in itself, Scott, I think ever since last summer. Last season had a disappointing start to it, but then the team finished with a flourish, winning 6 of 7, and then won a good game against the Giants this year, but that was sandwiched in between 3 losses, 2 very close losses, and then a sort of an eviscerating, limp, inert performance at Arizona. All through that, this team never lost its psychological hardness, its belief in itself, its optimism, and then the win started to come. So I think I would argue that the real Carolina Panthers were not what we saw last year, not what we saw early this year, but closer to what we saw during the 8-game win streak.
Is it psychological to come off a couple of really bad seasons and still have faith in yourself and go through a couple of losses early in this season and still have faith in yourself? Faith based on what?
Yeah, you're right. It's difficult, Mike. I think that was the thing. I mean, they went into this season 2-12 in games decided by 7 points or fewer under Ron Rivera. Mm-hmm. Then they lost 2 straight just like that. They were 2-14 in those games, and it looked like Rivera might be on the verge of having some real trouble with job security.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden they started winning, and they've, you know, confidence, like lack of confidence, is very contagious. I also think the other thing that's happened is Rivera has become a gambling man. He is Riverboat Ron now,
Ron, yes.
And that has prompted some faith, I believe, in the offense and kind of carried over to what was already a very good defense.
Well, let's talk about that. Did he become a gambling man because, quite frankly, everybody was talking about him going? He has nothing left to lose, and so what the heck? Put it all on the table. Is that what happened?
You know, Mick probably has his opinion on that. I kind of think that was some of what happened, that in Buffalo, for instance, he did not go for a critical 4th-and-1, kicked a field goal, and then lost by a point. Mm-hmm. And after that, I think he just looked more at the analytics a little bit and then also just said, you know what, I'm going to trust my offense. I've got a huge quarterback. I've got a very good guy on 4th-and-1 in Mike Tolbert and Newton, and we're going to make some of these.
Does that mesh, this new Riverboat Ron persona, does that mesh better with what Cam Newton brings to the table?
I think so, Mike, and it also meshes better with the DNA of football. I mean, this is a game. This is not like baseball, where it's more of a finesse game, where the metrics are so key into your decision-making. This is a game played by alpha males whose belief in the we can do it sense. I mean, you got to be a little nutty even to play NFL football. So these guys, they want to go for it. And Coach Rivera knows that because he himself played the game at the highest levels of football. And it is hard. It's one of the most difficult things in sports to do, is to kind of remake yourself in the season. When you get to the NFL, you pretty much are who you are. So for a coach to go from risk manager to risk taker during the season, Scott alluded to it, the seat under him got so hot, he finally decided, as you say too, Mike, what the heck, let's start going for a few of these. And then that struck a spark in this team, and it's been burning ever since. Mm.
So that was the switch that was thrown to change the momentum or the win-loss record for this team?
I would argue with that, and I would argue yes, but also I think, Mike, was Cam Newton suddenly started winning close games. They won three straight in a row. He had gone his first 40 games, he never had a last-minute touchdown drive. He had two in a row in New England and what was the other one, Mick? Miami, I guess, or two out of 3 weeks. But anyway, he started to make those. He's, as Mick alluded to earlier, they weren't closing the deal. They were very close in games against very good teams for a long time.
Is that a matter of inexperience on his part? Because he's relatively new in the scheme of things, isn't he, to the NFL? I mean, he's been here how many years now?
This is his third year.
Third year. So is that how long it takes a quarterback in the NFL to kind of get their footing and get their confidence and know that they can command an NFL team?
Sometimes it takes longer. Drew Brees, the great Drew Brees, one of only five men in the history of NFL football to throw for 50,000 or more yards career, he really didn't catch on until his fourth year in the NFL. Some guys, it takes longer. I think one of the best things that happened to Cam Newton was RG3. It was Andrew Luck. It was Colin Kaepernick. It was the rise to prominence of the next class, of the class of 2012. Cam Newton was in the class of 2011. So this allowed him to become last week's news. Nobody was tweeting, chatting, twitting, blogging, doing all that stuff about how great Cam Newton is because he'd kind of been nationally sort of forgotten about. So that allowed him to turn this maturity corner to, if you compare the comments, Mike, that he was making early in his career, he had the one interview where he said, this is like a jungle and I'm the lion, you know, I'm insinuating that he's some kind of top predator. Now, listen to him now, he sounds like he's reading from page one, paragraph one of the head coaching manual.
Yes, he does.
It's true. I wrote a column last week, Mike, where I said he suddenly starts sounding to me a lot like Jake Delhomme without the Cajun accent, but he's talking the way that your teammates want you to talk. He's not saying, hey, it's me, I want to be an entertainer and an icon, like he said in an interview even before he came into the NFL. Now he's saying, it's us. And I think he trusts his teammates more, doesn't try to do it all himself.
You're there every day, Mick. I'm sure you may be there every day too, Scott. But what's it like behind the scenes, between the games, when you have these guys who are making a gazillion dollars, many of them, is the pressure real on them to perform? When you're going through a losing season, as they did last year, is it miserable? Is the atmosphere miserable? Do they feel put upon? Do they feel the need to go out there and win the next game? And when they don't, what's it like?
In a way, these guys are brilliant actors. They camouflage very effectively some of that internal stress and strife that you mentioned, Mike. It's there, but they're pros, and when the team goals evaporate, they retreat to individual goals, and they still try to play as hard as they can. They try to compete as hard as they can. It's the currency that an NFL locker room trades in. When times are better, then it's like Mardi Gras. It's like a big... It's almost like your junior high school gym class. These guys have this exuberance, this childlike enthusiasm for this great game, and they play bin ball, they play rat tail, they play dominoes. They have all kind of just hooting and howling, and it's so collegial. It's like a big fraternity in there. I think that's part of why guys struggle when they retire. They miss that.
There was an article in the paper this morning about the atmosphere coming out of the scrum.
That's right. I was there. Yeah.
And they were kind of – I mean, the loss on Sunday night in prime time, a national audience, was like they just took it off their backs and they're moving on.
Well, I think that's true. We walked in the locker room yesterday. We get 45 minutes on Wednesdays and Thursdays to interview players in a locker inside the locker room. And as we walked in yesterday, there was literally a offense versus defense wrestling battle on the floor going on. D'Angelo Williams was piled upon by six or seven players. Star Latulele, their new rookie defensive tackle, looked to me like nobody was going to beat him. Now, that guy is really strong. But you walked in there, and they were having a lot of fun. And as Mick alluded to, I think they understand. Yes, they had a terrible loss Sunday, no doubt about it. But they're 9-4. That's the first time they've been anywhere near that in a long time. And they understand all their goals are still ahead of them.
Even as it became apparent Sunday night that we were going to lose that game, the NBC announcers, you'll have to forgive me, Mick, I was watching him on television, the NBC announcers were talking about...
That's the way you want to handle it.
Sorry. The NBC announcers were still talking about the Panthers as a serious team. There was no scoffing at, well, this is all dumb luck. They were talking about them as contenders. I mean, it was the tone of their voices. So what happened on Sunday? Was it simply that this is the first time they've been exposed to a nationwide audience in a long time, and that was pressure on them? What happened?
No, I think they're used to that stage. You know, Mike, I was thinking about driving over to visit with you and Scott, and I was thinking about your the immense talent that you bring to everything that you do, really, the stage, the screen, the radio, and all that. And you know, if you're an actor, if you're acting in a play and one night it just doesn't go well, you miss your mark, you flub a line, you get through it as best you can, you can't wait for the next night, right? You can't wait for that curtain to go up again so you can rack it up and do it again and atone for that. Your confidence in yourself, I'm sure, is unassailable and absolute. It just didn't go well on a particular night. For the Panthers against the Saints, they ran into, first of all, Carolina missed some opportunities early. Two long drives. They had the ball for 11 minutes in the first quarter, but only got 6 points out of it. Mm-hmm. That kind of got the Saints fans happy. And the Panthers just ran into a team that on that night was better than they were. And the remarks coming out of the locker room had a high degree of accountability. There was no finger pointing. There was no, hey, the offense let us down. The defense didn't get their job done. It was just the sense of, man, we can't wait. It's too bad we got to wait a week to play again because we wish we could play again right now in the parking lot.
Yeah, this was the first national exposure the team has gotten in a long time.
Well, not really, Mike, because remember they played the Monday night football game against New England only 2 weeks before and won a very controversial and thrilling game at home. And really, Monday night football gets practically the same audience. So it was – they've played – but I think the difference was they played in New Orleans where the Saints are 7-0.
Right.
On the road, the Saints are 3-3, and that's why – I think in 2 weeks or a week and a half, it will be a much closer game.
So if you're sitting in Albuquerque or Peoria and you haven't been following the Panthers, what impression have you gotten this season of them from primetime television exposure?
Well, I think two things. One, they've got a really good defense, and a defense will give you a shot in any sport at any time if you've got a great defense. And then Cam Newton. Those are the two things people in Peoria know about probably.
Does the fact that they're winning this season make your job as the local Panther Network guy, not the local guy, but the guy who is the announcer for the Panthers on the Panther Radio Network. Does it make your job easier?
During your setup, you said I was a homie. I think you meant Homer. A homie is a guy from your neighborhood or from your hometown.
Well, yeah, you're the modern hometown guy. You're paid to be good to these people.
Unlike
the Cavalier basketball announcer I grew up listening to.
Joe Tate.
I've forgotten his name, but he was brutal with these people. And I thought, how do you keep your job?
Really?
Yeah,
he was
Joe
brutal.
Tate. They love people. People, adversity breeds togetherness. We've long
misery loves company. Yeah.
But no, it's tremendously different. Just the way people get on and off the elevator, the way people pick up trash in the parking lot, the way people pull weeds out of the flower bed, the way the coaches interact with the staff and vice versa. When you are winning, the food tastes better. Your wife's perfume smells better. It's amazing how great my truck is running now. My truck has never run this well. Part of it is because the Panthers are running well.
And it has heat. Mick Mixon is with us. He's the play-by-play voice of the Carolina Panthers on the Panther Radio Network. And Scott Fowler, sports writer with the Charlotte Observer and author of 100 Things Panthers Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die. Maybe we'll go through some of these. I've got them earmarked here in a second or two. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Mr. Rogers Windows, a local family business since 1986, offering renewal by Anderson replacement windows and entry door systems installed by trained craftsmen. Product details at MrRogersWindows.com. And U.S. Airways, which begins new seasonal daily service from Charlotte to Barcelona, Brussels, Lisbon, and Manchester this spring. More information at USAirways.com. Well, we've all heard about the skyrocketing cost of a college education. Tuition has become nightmarishly high for parents who are footing the bill and for students who sometimes leave with mountains of debt that they'll never pay off. Some schools are responding now by cutting their tuition, lowering it. And we meet the presidents of two area schools who have done just that. Find out why and what it will mean tomorrow at 9.
On the next Ian Rehm Show, Secretary of State Kerry expressed disgust that Ukrainian authorities are using riot police and bulldozers to quell protests in Kiev, the latest on unrest in the former Soviet Republic and prospects for economic ties with the EU.
The Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks here on WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins, and we're here with Mick Mixon, the voice of the Carolina Panthers, and Scott Fowler, the Charlotte Observer sports writer, who has also written 100 Things Panthers Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die. And by the way, this is a suitable Christmas gift, it seems to me, and he'll be signing copies of the book at Park Road Books on Saturday, December the 14th at 2 p.m. So let's go through this season. We had three preseason wins and one loss, and on the season we're, 9-4? When you look at the scoring, it seems pretty impressive to me, and you know, Mick, how much I know about football. How much do I know about football?
Very little.
Exactly. But to me, it looks impressive.
You hide it well. The thing I know about question. Mike Collins, Scott, is that Mike has this, he's like Bruce Lee. He's a great counterpuncher, black belt in putting you off stride. He pretends to know, what little do I know about the Hundred Years' War? And then he'll have these deep facts.
Because he's a good researcher.
Yep.
Yeah. So the Panthers, 38-0 over the Giants. 35-10 over the Vikings. 30-15 over the Rams, 31-13 over the Buccaneers, 34-10 against Atlanta, who's having a miserable year, 27-6 over the Buccaneers again, and a couple of squeakers thrown in there just to make things exciting. So how would you describe all these victories?
I think you got something, Scott?
It's all you.
Go. It's not all me. It's one-third me, if that. The common thread, I think, that has knitted these wins together is that this Panther team is versatile. This team it's not just a one-trick ball club that has a great defense but an offense that struggles or an offense that has to be on a dry field or in a dome to do well. It's not the greatest show on turf. Excuse me. This team is a team that could mud if it had to. If it could get to the postseason, it could win games in a variety of ways. They can stone you with that defense and win 14-13 if they have to, or they can light the scoreboard up and win 30-27 if they have to.
What's your take on it?
Well, I think it's as we talked about earlier, I think the difference, one of the main differences, they've just won some of the close games they used to lose, and their confidence has gotten going. I think Newton's maturity has been a big factor in it. That Cam is just, his stats are not much different, but to me, having watched him, I went up there and covered him in the NFL draft when the Panthers drafted him. He blew me off before an interview. He blew several other people off. I didn't get a good first impression of him at all, but that has really changed over the years. I really think now he's trying very hard to be a leader. I mean, he's 24 years old. We all know what we were like at 24, but he's a lot different than he was at 21 or 22. I think he's a huge factor. Also, I think Rivera is honestly coaching better.
Yeah, a lot of these were big wins, but the most exciting one was about 2 or 3 weeks ago when I almost turned it off because I thought it's over. And then in the last second, it seems, they won.
You talking about the Monday night game against New England?
That could have been what it was. I can't remember what the game was.
You'd have been listening on radio. You would have total recall of all the to-ing and fro-ing that happened in the game. But
I don't get reception at night.
Oh, please.
I used to work there. I know what I'm talking about. Go ahead.
Oh, my gosh. I like what Scott said. You know, in the NFL, the money down is third down and four. Third and three, third and four. It's not that difficult to get a couple yards on first down, to get a couple yards on second down. But what do you do when it is third and four? And with the Cam Newton-led Carolina Panthers, this team is a handful on third and medium. There's the threat of the option. There is the threat of a running quarterback who's not just a good runner for a quarterback. He's a good runner for a runner at 6'5", 245. There is a mid-range passing game, short-range passing game. The quick game has been effective this year. Backs that can catch the ball out of the backfield. Very productive tight end in Greg Olsen, and then offensive players, receivers on the wings that are making plays downfield. This team is hard to deal with when it is third and four, and the Panthers have one of the best third down conversions in football this year at over 45%.
You know, Mick and I used to work together every morning on a radio station years ago, and so every day, and we don't see each other except maybe once or twice every 2 years on this program.
I can see why there's a lot of animosity.
Yeah, yeah, and it always amazes me, his command, and also this morning your command, of all these numbers, of all these statistics, of all these variables. How do you keep all that stuff in your heads, both of you? Seriously.
Oh, I don't know if I do it as well as Mick, but you know, it's like anything you really like. You probably just numerically, it just, you know, files into your mind in a certain way.
I got to tell you, I like money, and I can't keep it in my head. So.
The way I do it at home, this time of year especially, my wife Dawn, that I love as much as a man can love his wife, she'll sometimes say to me, "Honey, have you been listening to anything I've just said?" And I'll say, "Well, no, but do you know that? You know that Sean Payton is 62-9 in games in which the Saints lead at halftime."
Yeah, so that's and what that probably impresses him.
Yeah, that's what that mark is. It's that frying pan mark on the side of your head. So we have this winning record, and yet on Monday we didn't do so well. And your colleagues, Scott, Joe Person in the paper, graded the players, gave Cam Newton a C+ on the game, receivers a C, a D to the offensive and defensive line, an F to the defensive backs, a D to the coaching. In fact, the highest score he gave anybody was a B- for the running backs. And you called the game a complete team loss. Just a bad night, or are there some weaknesses that game showed us that we kind of were blind to prior to that?
Well, both of those, I think, Mike. It was their worst night, their worst day of the year. They're playing a very good team, too. So you give the Saints credit. Also, they do have some weaknesses. I mean, this is a team that otherwise, if they didn't have any weaknesses, they would be 13-0 instead of 9-4. But they have some problems. Their offensive line, to me, is a place they're going to have to upgrade probably in the offseason. And they probably need one more wide receiver. Steve Smith's playing well, but he's got some, you know, he's older. He's 34 years old. Eventually, you're going to have to replace Steve Smith.
So when you look at what's coming up, the Jets, the Saints, the Falcons, any of the weaknesses that became apparent on Monday night, should we be concerned about those weaknesses against these teams?
Absolutely. It's not fair that the Panthers play one of the Ryan brothers in three consecutive weeks. Rob Ryan is the defensive coordinator of New Orleans. He and Rex Ryan are twin brothers. They're the son of Buddy Ryan, who's this dastardly, villainous figure, but a brilliant defensive mind in pro football circles. And what these guys are all about is aggression. If they were poker players, Mike, they would want to raise the ante. I mean, you put your ante in there, they'd want to raise that if they could. This is how they play and coach football. So the Ryan brothers have already talked, and they've shared intelligence and information on how to defend and attack the Carolina Panthers. Mm-hmm. So I think that for this offense, you know, the defense didn't do well against the Saints. The Saints, though, can make almost any defense look bad. This Panther offense against a defense that has many of the same schemes and many of the same beliefs that the Saints had has to get it dieseled up for this game, or it could be a long day.
Would I be wrong in saying that the Carolina Panther fans have been long-suffering?
No, I don't think you'd be wrong at all. I mean, this has been since 2008 mm-hmm. that they have not had a playoff season, and they have never, ever, and this amazes me because they're almost 19 years old. So if you think of the Panthers as a person, they're old enough to vote but not old enough to buy beer yet. But they still, that 19 years, you know, you've got a history mm-hmm. there, and they have never had consecutive winning seasons. I think that is a definition of long-suffering.
Because we came into being in 1995. 8 years later, we played in Super Bowl 38 against the Patriots, lost, but in a short amount of time, we had played in the Super Bowl.
Very impressive. Yeah.
And unlike many Super Bowls, that game was considered by a lot to be the most well-played and most exciting Super Bowl to that time ever. We only lost by 3 points in that game. And then we went through a long stretch where Super Bowls were out of the question. So how would you characterize the history of this team?
Well, I like Scott's analogy of it being a person. I think right now we're sort of right here at puberty. And, you know, our acne's clearing up, and we got some muscles where we used to have not. And we somehow or another, we lucked into a date with the head cheerleader Now we just got to learn how to handle all this. We got to learn as an organization and as fans, as players, learn what it feels like and how you act
but
when you are good.
And I hear all these analogies by sports guys, but the team is not a person. And the players, the component parts of this person team change a lot. The brain of the team has changed many times.
Yeah, four times. Yeah.
Over the course of the franchise. So how – why is that? What is it about a team that you can use an analogy like there being a person in adolescence?
My golly, work with us here. It's a little bit of an analogy. You got to learn just like, you know, it's a team. I think it holds water. The team has had to learn what it can do, what it can't do, how to learn how to manage a salary cap. It's had to learn what kind of offense will work well in the modern day NFL. You know, 3 yards in the cloud of field turf doesn't work anymore. The quarterback position has changed. Quarterback positions change overnight. Mm-hmm. How are you going to get – how many 100 million births does it take before Mother Nature gives you a Peyton Manning, gives you a Drew Brees, a Tom Brady, an innately accurate passer of the football who can sit back there in the pocket and pick a defensive part? This is all changing right underneath the Carolina Panthers. So I think, Mike, the Panthers – We haven't had all the answers. That's the reason that we are long suffering is because we've been suffering for a long period of time.
Thank you, because I am a literalist. That I understand.
There you go.
I think to sum up, I think with the combination, Scott, of Dave Gettleman, who doesn't want to be in the headlines, right. He just wants to manage from
their
from
general
behind.
Manager. Done a
exactly.
Really good job. Yep.
With Ron Rivera learning on the job, coming into some kind of his own, if the old saw works, as a head coach. And then with Cam Newton coming in 2011, Luke Kuechly coming in 2012, a solid draft this past year. It's here.
Every team needs a few stars too, Mike. And this team has sometimes had a few and sometimes has not. And now, right now, they do have an anchor on offense and defense in Newton and Kuechly. And really, you can't do it in the NFL with just a bunch of pretty good players. You have to have two or three that are just outstanding.
Now, I haven't given out the phone number, but John in Rockingham got out his old white pages and looked it up and is joining us now. John in Rockingham, welcome to the program.
Hey. I'm really proud of the Carolina team, and I'm heartbroken that the Giants are not doing well, but I'm going to pull completely for the Carolina team, and I really wish that the Giants would hire the Panthers' offensive head coach.
But that would John, that would hurt us. I know you're a transplanted Yankee and you're pulling for the Giants in your heart, but that would hurt us.
John makes a great point. The two coordinators, not just Mike Shula, but Sean McDermott, that's another thing. You know, and we all, of course, innately know that the Panthers are not a person. It is a big organization with a lot of moving parts. But, Scott, don't you think that on this team there are six or seven assistant coaches? This is a different staff than previous staff. This staff has six or seven guys that will probably be, you could easily imagine them being NFL head coaches one day.
And where do you what do you want him to do on the for the Giants?
I'd love for the Giants to hire the Panthers' offensive coordinator.
As their head coach or as their offensive coordinator?
No, I think Tom Coughlin's fine, but
it's just their play caller. I got you.
Terrible.
I got you. Yeah. Well, you know, Mike Shula has done a good job, Mick. He was the quarterback's coach, was promoted in the offseason, and a guy who has labored under the long, long shadow of his Hall of Fame father, Don Shula. Mike's done a real good job balancing the offense this year.
So thank you for your call, John. So we came into the league around the same time some other expansion teams came in, like Jacksonville and the Jaguars. How do we compare to those other teams? How have they done in comparison to how we've done over the last 19 years?
Well, they came in together, Panthers and Jaguars. In fact, I was at an exhibition game they played together in 1995, first time the Panthers ever played. In general, you'd have to say, and if you put them in that very small subset, they've pretty much torched Jacksonville. That team, I wouldn't be surprised if it moves to Los Angeles. Its fan support is eroded. It has never made a Super Bowl. It had some early success, but now is one of the worst teams in the NFL.
Why did our fan support not erode to that degree during the lean years?
Well, I think it was partly a marketing genius move by a man named Max Mulliman, who had sold the Panthers and Mr. Richardson on permanent seat licenses, which give you a huge incentive to keep buying your season tickets over and over, even in the lean years, because you lose your original fee, which was usually several $1,000.
Right.
It's a concept that has kept the Panther fans loyal almost whether they want to or not.
So in those off years, when things were not going well, when we'd go to game after game and we would lose game after game, what was going on? What was going wrong? Was it the coaching? Was it the players? Was it the management bringing in the wrong players? Just luck of the draw? What was going on?
What do you think, Scott?
Well, I think it was a combination of some of all of those things. I mean, they did go to the playoffs three times in the year in the 2000s decade. That was actually a pretty successful time by the Panther standards. But a lot of times, like we were talking about a minute ago, I don't think they had enough stars. I mean, they really didn't have – you got to have some big-time guys who are going to win the game in the last 5 minutes. This is the same in any sport. It's the same in the NBA and others. Sometimes they just didn't have the quarterback. I mean, in 2010, they started poor Jimmy Clausen. They were 2-14. 1 year, they were 1-15 and started Chris Winkie. I mean, they were just totally overmatched. So one time Rivera told me an odd stat. I said, how much do you think the quarterback is part of the game on offense? He said, 55%. Very specific number, 55%. So right now, that 55% is pretty darn good. There's a lot of teams in the NFL that would love to have Cam Newton.
So in those years when we didn't have the quarterback, is that because we couldn't afford the quarterback, because we didn't get the right guy in the draft, we didn't have the right position in the draft, or we weren't willing to pay for the quarterback? What's the deal? How does that work?
Sometimes you just miss. I mean, sometimes the science is inexact. I think that when the Panthers drafted Jimmy Clausen, there were a lot of high fives in the draft room. I think the Panthers felt like they had good value there. A lot of people looked at Matt Moore, who played after Jake Delhomme, and thought, here's a guy who's big. He looks good on the hoof. He can make yards in the NFL. He's a quarterback that you could build an offense around. Sometimes you just – the plan looks pretty good and sounds pretty good, but it doesn't work on the football field.
Ron Rivera, the team's fourth head coach, as you've said, Scott, has he had more success over time than his predecessors?
Well, no, not more success. In fact, that was one of the reasons why he was fairly close to getting fired about this time last year. But he's had a reasonable amount of success. As I wrote before the season, I thought he would get fired if they didn't make the playoffs. I still believe that, but I also believe they're going to make the playoffs.
Does Jerry Richardson, because he was a player, does he have more tolerance for this because he has a greater understanding of what it takes to build and run a team? Or how would you describe his approach to this?
He may have less tolerance because he was a player. And I hadn't thought about this in this context since you mentioned it, Mike. But Mr. Richardson is – everybody that works at the Panthers could tell a personal story about philanthropy, outreach, how he'll ask you how you're doing. Make sure that you don't – while you're worried that he's going to get in a funk, he'll come give you a pep talk, make sure you're not getting in a funk when the team has been losing. So, you know, I think he's rooting extremely hard for Coach Rivera and for this staff, and I think he deserves a lot of credit for helping keep the – for not only for bringing the Panthers here, but for keeping us here. Our stadium's getting ready to undergo a beautiful facelift. I saw a video the other day on some of the things they're going to do, the escalators that'll take 6,000 people per minute up to the upper deck. I mean, it's incredible what Bank of America Stadium is going to look like in 2 years.
Let me write that check now for $86 million, wasn't it? Let me write that check for you right now. Mick Mixon is the voice of the Carolina Panthers. He's here along with Scott Fowler, sports writer for the Charlotte Observer and author of 100 Things Panthers Fans Should Know Before They Die. We're coming right back after the break, and we'll talk about what's ahead for the Panthers. And we'll talk about some of these people that they've been alluding to that have been responsible for the rebirth of a winning season. Stay with the Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Fuel Pizza, celebrating 15 years serving the Carolinas and offering fresh ingredients and healthy options, building a healthier generation through field-to-fork programs in local schools. Details at fuelpizza.com. And Founders Federal Credit Union, an innovative credit union with 24 offices across the Carolinas and over 90 ATMs in its network. Information available at foundersfcu.com. Secretary of State John Kerry expressed disgust that Ukrainian authorities are using riot police and bulldozers to quell protests in Kiev. Guest host Susan Page and her guests discuss the latest on unrest in the former Soviet Republic and prospects for economic ties with the European Union. All coming up in 20 minutes at 10 on The Diane Rehm Show. Want to join our conversation about the Panthers? Now's the time. WFAE.org/CharlotteHawks is the place to start, and we're coming right back.
This is Amy Rogers from WFA Eats, 90.7's food blog, where we share stories about food and recipes for you to try on family and friends. Food is an important part of the holiday season, and you can pick up some new ideas and recipes at WFAEats.org, and also by listening to The Splendid Table and America's Test Kitchen, weekend afternoons at 3 o'clock on 90.7 WFAE, listener-supported public radio.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Scott Fowler is signing a copy of his book. One copy, exactly. So be there for at Park Road Books on Saturday, December 14th at 2 o'clock. And we'll hope we have time to delve into some of the book. He's here with Mick Mixon. We're talking about the Panthers. Jim on Facebook writes, "Hey, guys, glad to see that the Panthers are finally acting like an actual real NFL football team. No. Good to see the local team win some. Having said that, go Patriots." Yeah. "I must remind folks that for years, Patriot fans were also long-suffering. Feel your pain. Been there." Paul on Twitter, "You can't say enough about young leadership on this Panther team. Keekly, in his sophomore season, has ignited our defense." Talk about him.
I'd agree with that. Keekly, I think, has been an enormous factor on this team, Mick. He's right in the middle of the defense. A middle linebacker is almost like your quarterback on defense, and he's just such a sure tackler and such a stand-up guy. When he makes a mistake, he admits it, he moves on, and he's really, really smart.
You've got to have, you know, Scott, I could say it differently than Scott, but no, certainly it would be less eloquent, but it's so star-driven. Mike, you take Steve Perry off of Journey. Take Freddie Mercury away from Queen. Take Mick Jagger off the stage with the Rolling Stones. And what are you left with? You got a pretty good band, but but people aren't going to pay $100 a ticket to come see you. You're not going to sell out. You know, the E Street Band's a great band, but take Bruce Springsteen away. What do you have? That's kind of what the Panthers were like in those years that you asked Scott and me about, when the wins were not there. There were some good musicians, but we just did not have that star quality that right now the Panthers do have.
So when you get a guy like Luke Kuechly and he begins to have an effect on the team, is it a snowball? Everybody kind of takes inspiration from him, gets confidence from him, from Cam, from others?
I think so. I think your other players often rise to the level, just like in any business environment probably. If you've got a couple of rainmakers, then you've got some other people who are going to sort of go, hey, you know what, I can do this, and especially if they don't have all the attention on themselves, because Kuechly, for instance, is so good, that allows some other people to be freed up and make some of the tackles.
Well, since I don't get to work on Sports 610, this is my big chance to answer the phone and bring people into the conversation at 704-926-WFAE. Dennis in Mooresville, welcome.
Morning, guys. Hey, if I say to Mick and to Scott the number 153, does that mean anything to them?
153? Well, it could be Section 153, I suppose, at the stadium. No?
That's the number of home games that count that the Panthers have played, and it's the number I have attended.
Whoa, that's pretty impressive.
Okay. I've actually been to 157 games. I went to one in New Orleans, and that's a horrible place. Not the town, the dome. Okay. And I've been to three in Atlanta, including game one, the first one ever played. But I got a question. I didn't call to brag about my loyalty to the team, but I am proud of it. The secondary has been called suspect, so I'm going to let you guys run with this. Will Gettleman be looking for a free agent that's a real interception hero, or do you think this secondary will mature?
Appreciate it, Dennis, and thanks for your loyalty. I was talking to somebody the other day, and we were visiting about Seattle secondary, which has this catchy nickname, the Legion of Boom. Well, I was thinking the Panthers are really the Legion of Whom, W-H-O-M, because a lot of people nationally don't know of Quentin Michael and Drayton Florence and Captain Munnerlyn and Mike Mitchell and Robert Lester and Melvin White. It's a group of guys that it's not a brand name. It'd be generic. It's not the brand name Fortune 500 that you see on the shelf. It's more some outstanding players, but I definitely get your point. And I don't know, to answer that question, Scott, I mean, you just have to say that every I'm not trying to dodge the question, but doesn't every general manager look to make every area of his football team stronger and better?
They do, and I think Gettleman will upgrade some places, at least one in the secondary, but I would guess that it would be more by the draft, because that's a little bit easier way to not have to spend an inordinate amount of money. You can use a draft pick there.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Okay, Dennis.
Well, thanks, guys.
Thank you for your call. Jane emails, there are still so many people who live here who root for other teams because they are transplants from other cities, and we are still a relatively new team. Will it take the younger generation coming to age before we are a true hometown team, and do other cities have this problem?
I think so, yes. I have my two older sons. I have four children. My two older ones are 15 and 12. They've never been they don't understand a time when the Panthers didn't exist. But for those of us who are older, many of us moved elsewhere, you know, from elsewhere. I grew up until I was 9 years old in Texas, had the Dallas Cowboys hardwired into my system. And many other people, you know, in the Northeast, we've got a lot of people from Buffalo. I got an email this week from a guy who says 500 Jets fans are in a club in Charlotte. I didn't even know that.
Wow.
You know, and they're meeting to watch the game. So, yes, the longer you're here, the second generation fans come in. They're the ones who end up inheriting those PSLs. I think each year the fan base grows stronger.
The other thing that would help is absolute victory. If the Panthers could ever hold a trophy up over their heads, and hopefully that day will come one day very soon, then all these Panther fans will now be galvanized. They'll now be a part of the rigid lattice of memory. And do you remember where we were when we watched the final seconds or listened to the final seconds of the Super Bowl tick off, mm-hmm. and the Panthers had done it?
You know, some teams have blue-collar fan bases. Others have crazy, what are described as crazy fans. And somebody described Panthers fans several seasons ago as a wine and cheese crowd who have to root for the Panthers because we have so few other sports opportunities in this town. How would you describe our fan base?
That's an old criticism of Tar Heel basketball, too, as Mick and I both have heard that one a number of times. No, I don't think they're really a wine and cheese crowd. I've seen much quieter crowds. I think I've been to almost every NFL stadium covering games. I would say the Panthers are middle of the pack. They are not crazed. They are not as hardcore as, for instance, Green Bay's fans or the Saints fans in the Superdome. But they're pretty good.
And that brings us to Christina's comment on the phone here. Christina from Charlotte, welcome. You're on WFAE.
Hi, guys. Good morning.
Morning.
It's funny that you started talking about the fans, because my comment was, you know, what can the Carolina Panthers organization do to ignite our fan base? You hear about big teams like, you know, New Orleans Saints going into Seattle and not even being able to function because it's so loud in that stadium, and yet you go to a game here in Carolina, and while maybe it's not the quietest of stadiums, it definitely doesn't have that energy that you might see in other parts of the country. And I was wondering if there's anything that the Panthers organization can do to try to ignite the fan base that we do have.
I think winning is the main thing. I mean, we talk about this internally in meetings all the time, and people that wear coats and ties and have offices with bathrooms in them and look out over Charlotte and get paid to discuss this kind of thing and make decisions that will affect the game experience moving forward. They talk about this thing all the time. And I tell you, fellas, I've never been more proud. I've been a Carolinian my entire life. I've never been more proud to live here than the New England Patriots game, not just because the Panthers won, but because that crowd stayed. I mean, you couldn't get home. You couldn't get home from that game. It was a school night. It's 11:30 at night, and there's still people out playing cornhole and tailgating and grilling out and staying to milk the last seconds of fun out of that night. I think that Panther fans are right there ready to erupt and ready to take their place among the best fans in the NFL. But, Mike, you mentioned earlier, from where we've been, the suffering that we've had, the losses with the gripping economy, one of the worst economic conditions over the last several years, Panther fans sacrifice a lot financially just to come to the game. So I think we got terrific fans.
So we have fans who have been waiting for the team to arrive. Has the team arrived?
Oh, it's fate has cards that she keeps very close to her vest. From here, it could go in any direction.
Wait a minute.
The last three games will be key. But, yeah, I think the
Wait a minute. 2 years ago when you were here before the season started, you were giving me all these glowing predictions about what was going to happen over the season. We're going to the Super Bowl, blah, blah, blah. And now we got three games left on a winning season, and you're, I don't know if we're going to die. I don't know.
That's part of my job. If the patient looks dead, resuscitate it. If it looks like the heart rate's getting up too fast, try to calm it down a little bit.
Thank you, Christine. Appreciate your call. Of the upcoming games with the Jets, the Saints, the Falcons, how would you handicap the odds of Panthers' victories in those three cases?
Well, my guess is they'll go 2-1 and end up 11-5 and make the playoffs.
We're going to lose to the Saints?
Well, I think they'll lose one of those three. I'm not sure which one. I just going 3-0 is going to be difficult, and the Saints would be the toughest one of those. So I don't know where they'll lose one, but I think that it's going to be hard to go 3-0. But I don't think they'll go anything worse than 2-1.
Well, because the Falcons are having a miserable season, and we are playing the Falcons for the second time after having beaten them once. We're playing them in Atlanta. Will that help the Falcons in that case?
Of course, they just detest the Panthers. There's this I-85 rivalry.
Mm-hmm, and
the best way to have a good time in the NFL if you're a player is to win and trump it up for yourself. But the second best thing to do is to wreck it for someone else. So, yeah, I think a scary scenario is the Panthers having to win at Atlanta to secure a berth in the postseason, which is why this myopic Mr. Magoo-like approach the Panthers have adopted, focus only on the 6 inches right in front of your face, has been so key.
Hmm. So the Jets are 6-7 on the year, and they're playing us at home. How do things look for that game on Sunday?
I think the Panthers will win that. I'm sure I'll pick them in the paper for that one. I think that the Jets are off and on team. They've got a quarterback who's thrown 20 interceptions, a rookie quarterback named Geno Smith. I think the Panthers' defense will probably be the key to the win.
Geno Smith is mercurial. He's hard to get a feel for. He's a rookie, and as Scott said, he's thrown it to the opponent a lot. He can also make plays. He's a running quarterback, a lot like Cam Newton. I think edge control will be key, setting a hard edge defensively and making sure that you do not allow him to break contain and get out on the edge, because when he does that, he becomes a threat to run and throw if he's still behind the line of scrimmage. He's made plays passing outside the pocket this year.
What did we learn from Sunday night's loss?
Well, I think they got a little bit comfortable. I think they maybe didn't do everything that they had done in the previous 8 weeks to win those 8 in a row. But I also think we learned that the Saints are just one heck of a team. I mean, there's no doubt about that. And so to beat them in 2 weeks, which the Panthers really want to do, I mean, they're going to have to play a game much like the one they played against New England.
I was watching some replays of that game yesterday, and they were all the replays of the winning plays on the part of the Saints.
That's about all the game was.
Yeah, yeah, but it almost looked like they were playing it back sped up. It just looked so fast, and
great
it didn't
point.
Look that way when I watched it originally. Am I imagining that?
No, it's a great point. The Saints will run 15 plays, for example, to start the game, and they'll show you 15 different formations, 15 different shifts, motions, personnel groupings. And I think one of the things you said, what did the Panthers learn? I think the Panther defense, particularly some of the young guns, learned that you can't have bad eyes. You can't be looking around and going, oh, gosh, where'd Sproles go? Why'd he go running by that way? You just got to do your job. You got to stay in your area, take care of your responsibility on the play, and not fall for some of this sleight of hand that the Saints can bring to offensive football.
So the Saints clinched the place in the playoffs, right?
They've not officially clinched it yet, but it's only a matter of time.
What do we have to do to get in there?
Well, they could actually get it this week, Mick, but they have to have about five things happen. They have to win and have three or four teams lose. But I would say 2-1 will absolutely do it. Mm-hmm. An 11-5 record would absolutely do it. 10-6 starts to get dicey. So they need to win at least two of the final three.
And what do we have to do to get one of those games here?
Probably have to win out. If you win out, and if the Saints should lose to the Rams, or if the Saints should lose to Tampa Bay in New Orleans, there's still a chance you could win the division, which might enhance things.
Yeah, that gives you a home playoff game. Otherwise, they don't get one. They've got to win the division to get a home playoff game.
So given what's going on, and I don't want to jinx things by putting the cart before the horse here, but given what's going on this season with other teams, including our own, if we were to make the playoffs, how do you handicap our chances of getting to the big game? Because I can't say Super Bowl because that's copyrighted. So the big game.
You can't even say it on the radio? No, that I think you can.
You can't put it in advertising.
Okay. You know, Las Vegas right now has the Panthers around 10 or 12 to 1 to win the Super Bowl, and I would probably agree with that. I think they're about 10 or 12 to 1. They could get hot. They would need to get very hot.
Okay, in the offseason, whether we go to the Super Bowl, whether we go to the playoffs or not, what kind of machinations are we likely to see behind the scenes in terms of how aggressive we'll be in the draft and player trades that might be in the offing?
I think very aggressive. I think Dave Gettleman, our GM, he said when he first got here, he likes big guys. He says that big men give your skill players a chance to compete. Mm-hmm. So I think that under Dave Gettleman, it's hard to imagine a draft where the scouts don't carefully vet some of the bigger, more sturdy offensive linemen and defensive linemen available. And then, like Scott said earlier, you always want to get better at wide receiver and get better in the back end. But when you say all that, you say the areas of needs, that's really not how most teams draft. It's not how the Panthers draft. They draft from a best player available standpoint. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, now, that is.
The game is to build a good team, not a collection of good players. But every team always says, oh, we're going, this guy's on the board, so we're taking him. Best player
available. We'll figure out where to put him later.
Yep.
So Dave Gettleman, the new general manager this year, has been described as somebody with a clear idea of how he wants to build a team. How much of a factor has he been in this winning season?
Oh, I think an enormous factor. Mick would probably agree that he's gotten a lot of bargains. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the key, Mike. You've got to have some bargains. You can't overpay everybody. There's a salary cap in the NFL, a hard salary cap. So if you get some bargains, like, for instance, Mike Mitchell, he's very cheap by NFL standards, and he leads them in interceptions.
All right, you have this book, Scott, called 100 Things Panthers Fans Should Know Before and Do Before They Die. So we only have a minute left.
All right.
Three things we should know, three things we should do.
Oh boy! And in 60 seconds,
yeah.
All right. Well,
two.
Okay, I'm gonna give you the things you should do first. You need to go to a training camp practice in Spartanburg. They are free. You need to go to the in August. You need to go to the free scrimmage they hold in Bank of America Stadium. That's a great place to get autographs. As far as stuff you should know, my most important Panther in the book, most significant guy, is Sam Mills. Steve Smith, a close number two.
I know that when the team is playing in Spartanburg for practice, that you must be at the Beacon Drive-In every day.
My cholesterol is already about a million. Tested very high in riboflavin in my last physical.
Thank you. I'm glad to hear it. Mick Mixon is the play-by-play voice of the Carolina Panthers on the Panthers Radio Network. Scott Fowler is the sports writer for the Charlotte Observer, author of 100 Things Panthers Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die. He'll be signing copies of that 2 p.m. Sunday, December 14th at Park Road.